We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Let's head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We'll say good morning to our friend John Keim. Covers the Commanders for ESPN.com. John, our long national nightmare is over. Terry gets extended. He'll be there for week one. When is he going to be on the practice field? Give us the details. I did like your idea, too, that you tweeted at John underscore Keim. I think the Commander should now start selling a, quote, hold-in hoodie in honor of Terry McLaurin. He's back in the fold.
There you go. Yeah, I would like a cut of that.
Sure.
It would be quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe he'll be out on the practice field on Wednesday. Thank God that ankle is healed.
Yeah, it's great. Good news.
Yeah, the thoughts and prayers worked, folks. The expectation is that he'll be out on the practice field Wednesday. It had to happen because this never made sense. Logically, these sides are way better together than apart. I think they're very good together, McLaurin in this community, with this fan base, with the organization, but also what he brings to the field is very good for them. It's good for the quarterback, but he now has a quarterback that is very, very good, and it can help him remain productive for the next several years. So it always made sense that this would happen. But, yeah, the expectation is he'll be out there and then obviously be ready for the season opener. It's a good thing for them, too, now because you get him back, and then Noah Brown looked really good running around on Saturday before the game. So you have now – you should have all your – the expectations that all three top receivers, Brown, McLaurin, and Steve-O, will be playing in that opener.
It's great that it happened when it did, John, because I know me, just as a fan, I was kind of reaching a tipping point. I had kind of said to myself, if he wasn't there – I'd said Thursday, right, because today's a big cut-down day.
Right,
Wednesday
right.
was a big – you know, it's a big practice squad day. So like, I figure everybody'd be busy. If he's not there by Thursday, I'm going to really kind of start to lose it. And everyone loves Terry. And I feel like sentiment was somewhat changing. Now all that can be, you know, behind us. We can move on and worry about the defense.
Yeah, but it is true. Like, the sentiment had definitely shifted.
Yeah.
And even just like, even on the comments I see on Twitter, on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
Initially, it was like 99-1.
Right.
You know, how can you not have this guy there? How can you assign him? And lately, it's been very split at best.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of it, too, is, you know, like, people just wanted him in there. And at some point, it's like, let's just get it done.
Right.
I think it's, I mean, they need him in this offense. We all know that. But it's that trickle-down effect of what he provides that can be a big boost to Deebo Samuel, you know, creating more room underneath for him to break tackles after the catch, right? And, you know, Zach Ertz over the middle. So,
John, thank God it's not a one-year deal like what they're dealing with in Cincinnati. We're going to deal with this all over again.
God, I would not want to go through that again. And, you know, yeah, and I think, I don't think he would have signed that.
Right.
No. And I don't think it would have made it would. Here's the thing. Like, it would not have made sense for him to play this deal out. It just wouldn't have. And you're really, you know, could it pay off for him differently? Maybe.
It's a risk.
But it was
too much
of a risk. It's a definite risk at that stage. And, you know, you can't help, like, the league views receivers as they get older differently. And that's just the reality of it. And so he would have been going into the market knowing he'd be 31 next year. So it just made sense to get this done. And it's less than what he would have wanted. I'd say it's more than what they obviously initially offered. But that's how these things go, right? You kind of meet, it feels like it's meeting somewhere in that middle. And we don't know. Here's the other thing. We don't know the true value of this contract yet.
Gotcha.
And you can see the quote average, but you can play with those numbers to get certain averages.
Right.
So we don't know the true value of it, but it definitely is a good
So the only big number we know is the $30 million signing bonus.
Correct. That's it.
Right.
And so, like, the team isn't going to say anything. They, you know, typically after signings like this, teams let the agents have the headlines, have the victory lap. There's no reason to come out and say, well, actually, the deal is this. And I think I know a lot of people have tried to get the total guarantees, including myself, and, you know, haven't gotten them. And you don't know, like, well, why is that? You know, why don't we know the total guarantees? Is it, you know, are you just being quiet, or are you?
What's your gut on the guarantee? Around $60 million?
Yeah, I would think so. That would make sense, right? I mean, that definitely makes sense. But it's on the average per year. It's going to be different, I think, when we see the final deal and like what the real terms are. But you know, the first couple of years, clearly to their liking, and this all, like I said, they. You know, Peters was out in San Francisco where they got a few deals done at this time of the year, right? So, and I think it also made sense. Like, I was talking to people a couple weeks ago, and they were kind of to the point where they're like, he's got to, one GM told me he's got to put the hammer down and, you know, give him a final offer. And now is the time where, and whether or not this was would be classified as that, I'm not, I can't 100% for sure say, but it makes sense if you say, like, this is the offer. We've got to get moving on the season. Let's go. You know, take it or play it out. I mean, you know, that would make sense, right? So, you know, like I said, logically, it always made sense to get this done because it's just, you know, McLaurin is very good here, and this is a very good place for him.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to on the field. It's amazing how just having him in the fold changes your perspective on the offense. The preseason was awful. You only saw Jaden. I guess one series, they scored a touchdown. What are your expectations for this offense coming in week one?
You know, I'm going to say it could still be bumpy, but honestly, I don't know because number five is just different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he makes a lot of things work. But the problem, the question I would have, the question, not the problem, because I don't know, because, again, they were very, very good last year, and you get all these parts back. But you know, you haven't had McLaurin out there. Noah Brown hasn't been out there. And, you know, the offensive line, like Tunsil's been, you know, in and out of practices with these, some minor issues. Brandon Coleman just got back. Sam Cosmi, obviously not there. You know, rookie right tackle. Who's going to be right tackle? Is it Connolly or Wiley? So, like, there's still some questions. And can it operate at a certain level of efficiency right away? Is this enough time to get it there? You know what I mean? So, like, that's the only question I would have. But when their pieces are together, you feel pretty good. And what I did like is what we saw from the run game. And I know is a small sample size, but even watching Rodriguez run, knowing what Eckler can do, you know, seeing what Kroski Merritt might be able to do in real games, like, you know, I think there's some encouraging signs there. But I just, you just wonder, can they get to, what level of efficiency can they get to right away, given how really little time they've had together this summer?
John, what do you say to fantasy owners that are kind of excited about Kroski Merritt? But I think I was listening to your pod a few days ago, and you mentioned that, look, they rarely keep more than three running backs active on game day. They like McNichols on teams. I mean, is there a scenario where Kroski Merritt's not even active on week one?
I think there, and I would say this, and people kind of sometimes misconstrue things. I don't know if that's going to be the case.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know their running back rotation. The only thing I would say is exactly that. Like, more often than not, it's only three.
Yeah.
Now, if that fourth is if all of them can play special teams and have a role there, then you can get away with that. Or, you know what I mean? So, like, it's conceivable. But if that fourth guy is mostly special teams guy, they're not going to get many carries. You know, it's hard. I would say this, even if all four are active, it's hard to get four running backs touches. And then you also factor in the run game, especially Jaden Daniels and Deebo Samuel. And I don't know how many carries a game Deebo Samuel will get, but he's certainly going to, you know, I would expect him to get a couple touches there every game.
Yeah.
And then, again, Jaden Daniels is a part of that run game.
Right.
So it will be hard to, I would have, honestly, if I'm playing fantasy, I don't know what I would do with their running back situation because I think it's going to be more by committee.
It's a little muddled.
Maybe avoid it altogether.
Yeah, I think then it's like, well, who might be their short yards guy? And it's like, well, Chris Rodriguez would make sense there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, like with Kroski Merritt, we just don't know. And I don't know what they're going to do there, but I do know, like, it does happen where they'll keep four active. But again, if you're keeping four active, they're not all getting carries.
Right. All right. So let's talk about the defense. I think everyone agrees on paper anyway, the secondary should be better. Remains to be seen how much better Lattimore is. People seem to love Amos. You know, I assume he will be an upgrade. Sanistrill, people pretty much love him. Now you got Noah I sort of on the back end of that rotation. Looks good. But I think there are still serious questions up front, sort of the front seven. I mean, Bobby Wagner is kind of the anchor there, but, you know, he's not going to get any, you know, he's a phone booth, right? I mean, there's a certain area he can cover. Where do we stand with that front seven? Because at the end of the day, we got to force punts, John. That's what I always say. Can we force punts? And I'm not certain that this unit can do it at a much greater rate than last year. I hope they can, but I don't know. It remains to be seen.
It remains to be seen. And so I think they're deeper up front than they were last year. What that means yet, I don't know. I think they can play different kinds of packages than they could. You can have a, quote, bigger pass rush package out there where if it's like third and three, third and four, guys like Jacob Martin, Payne, Kinlaw, and like Dietrich Wise, all capable of rushing the passer, not necessarily great pass rushes, but all capable. But they can also, they're also big enough if they're trying to run the ball too, right? So like you really couldn't do that last year. So there are little things like that. And I think there's a lot of versatility up front. And I think when you see games and like watch how Dorrance Armstrong is used and, you know, the way I believe they will be moving Frankie Louvu around more than they did last year as a pass rusher. So I think like those ways can make them effective. But yeah, I mean, you know, I can sit here and talk about that, but you have to do it. And I think the big key for that group will be the fourth quarter, because they were horrendous in the fourth quarter last year. Mm-hmm. And so for the first three quarters, they were pretty good, right? And then will they force more turnovers? Because that's a massive key. Like we didn't see any of this preseason either.
Right.
So, and I know it wasn't a lot of the starters, but still, like, you know, this team turned it over quite a bit. I think the turnovers will be a big key. And then obviously the run defense. And, you know, Kinlaw is a big dude. And there are times where he is just, you see that size just like stun offensive linemen. But then you also see him sometimes like maybe getting up out of his stance too much, right? And, you know, how does that play out? And so I do think they have more ability to be good up front than they did last year. You have to do it. We've all heard times in the past where things look a certain way and don't play out that way. But I like what they've done. I think there's, again, the ability to be more creative is there, but got to do it.
John, how much concern that there's not a lot of depth behind Louvu and Wagner in a young, untested linebacker core?
I think there has to be concern, right? Because, you know, I know they like Jordan McGee a lot. And when he's healthy, he looks pretty good. But he has to stay healthy. That's the key. But he's also inexperienced. I do think like him being healthy, he'll get more reps because they'll use more three linebacker sets against like bigger pack offensive packages, like two tight end, three tight end sets, which they couldn't really do last year effectively. I think that will help the run game as well. But they need him healthy. And then behind him, Nick Ballore is a special teams guy. And let's say they keep Kane Medrano, a draft pick. Well, he's not a big guy. Like there was debate whether they should try him at safety or linebacker. So he's going to be more of that. Like if they went to the Buffalo nickel package, like that's kind of his role, and using his speed and can he cover? And then it's like, well, do you keep another linebacker? Ali Cajo, like who had a nice summer. And I don't know that they'll keep a sixth linebacker because it just depends on what they do at some other positions. But yeah, there's you really only have one backup right now that with McGee who has experience to go into a game, but it's minimal because of the injuries he suffered.
Hey, how are you feeling about special teams specifically?
Kicker.
Well, we'll talk about that. Yeah, Matt Gay. I know he didn't have a great training camp and preseason, but.
Nope.
Lane, is Lane the number one punt returner?
Yes.
Okay, how are you feeling about that? And then how are you feeling about Gay?
So I like Lane a lot, and I think, he just looks different. Even in practices, like watching them just return it on air, right, where he just is a little bit different, a little bit quicker after catching the ball. The way he catches the ball, I think, gives him, you know, his first step is almost always forward, where some other guys, their first step is like back and then pushing off to go forward. Like, that little thing makes a difference. He's quick with his cuts. So I like what I think he can do. He's going to, I don't know about taking chances, but he's going to be aggressive. And, you know, I know, like, Brian Mitchell is something, he loves watching this kid. And I trust him, but I've enjoyed watching how he practices with that and the way he looks. So I like what I think he can do. And there are going to be some 2-yard gains and a few 40 to 50 yard gains because of that desire to be a little bit more aggressive. As far as Gay goes, like, he started off fine. And then the last couple weeks, you know, the last several weeks, I would say, like, there were more misses than you'd like. I don't know that it was like, you know, we've seen kickers here who have been a lot worse in camp. The games, the what concerns you is that his struggles typically from his career are from longer distances, and that's where he missed. And so, you know, you have other teams that's an advantage for them. So he's, you know, you have to be better. And it's funny because I know, like, people always, they get a lot of, like, they need to bring more kickers into camp for competition. Well, the competition for kickers is always there. Like, kickers know that if they have a bad game or two, that they're in trouble. And the kickers that you would bring in, that you would look at, are out there. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll see some more today for any team that had two out there. And they didn't bring one in. Teams don't typically like to bring in a second kicker into camp because it's, you know, you're keeping one of 90. You want that roster spot somewhere else. But there are teams that do, especially like in here, they thought they had it solved. But if they guys that they may want to our quote-unquote competition, they're out there, and they'll be out there after today with the final cut. So, but yeah, he's like, that was concerning, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
All right. John, thanks as always. We know you're super busy on cut down day. We appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, that's John Keim, covers Commanders for ESPN.com. He will be a busy man throughout the day. Don't forget, Joel Corey is going to join us coming up in just about 25 minutes. He's a former sports agent. We can break down any details he might know about Terry McLaurin's new extension with the Washington Commanders. That's at 7:45. Don't forget,
we know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Joel Corey will join us in just about 20 minutes. Former sports agent, always has great intel about deals and extensions. So we will talk about the Terry extension with him coming up in just about 20 minutes. So we wanted to get into some audio here of RG3 talking about the alleged quarterback competition between Shedeur Sanders and Dillon Gabriel in Cleveland. Things are getting a little bit more clear now in Cleveland with Kenny Pickett getting traded to the Raiders. So that now they've got Flacco, Shedeur Sanders, and Dillon Gabriel. Here's RG3 talking about that, what he doesn't feel was a fair competition.
And make no mistakes about it. Yes, Shedeur Sanders was a fifth-round pick, but he ain't never been a fifth-round talent. That's why in his mind, he is saying, I can change a franchise if you give me the opportunity to. Right now, Cleveland is not doing that. I looked at the snap count chart. We'll throw that up for you guys on the screen. And people were saying, oh, he was playing with the same guys that Dillon Gabriel was. No, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. He was not. He was playing with the 3-4s and 5s offensive line. How many sacks did Shedeur have in the game?
More than five.
No, he had five.
He had five
sacks in the game, playing behind the 3, 4, and 5 offensive line. Two of those sacks, he held the ball too long. The other ones, he never had a chance. Wide receivers, did he play with the same wide receivers that Dillon Gabriel did?
No.
No, he didn't. When Shedeur Sanders was put out there with the proper talent around him, he excelled. 2 touchdowns. Shined on the big stage. I know it was the preseason, but it was the most watched preseason game in over a decade. Shined. But when they put him out there with talent of guys that are not going to be on NFL rosters, that was the result. So when people say, hey, they're setting him up for failure, this is what they're talking about. I believe the Browns have good intentions for all the quarterbacks in their room. I don't believe that their execution of making it look like they had the best interest of everybody in the room was there. How can you get a proper assessment of Shedeur Sanders if you don't allow him to play with the same players that Dylan Gabriel played with?
Or even give him the same opportunity of like running the 2-minute drill at the end of the game.
Which is just, again, doesn't make sense. You set yourself up for that. So I say that in closing that I believe the Browns need to trade either Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders. Because right now, it's not about it not being fair for either guy. It's not a growth or leadership environment for either guy. And that makes it a bad, toxic situation around their quarterback conversation in the media.
Hmm. Kurt Warner made a very similar point online. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. What we don't know is what's happening in practice. And they drafted one guy in the third round and one guy in the fifth round. So they hold one guy, at least going in higher regard than the other.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a way to kind of quell the expectations and just to have sort of the natural order of things. Have Gabriel be the two, Shedeur be the three, and then let it kind of play out during the season, sort of behind closed doors. Maybe
Robert mentioned the two sacks where he held on to the ball. Mm-hmm. I know ESPN put the average time of release was almost 4.5 seconds. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to get rid of the ball faster than
that
in the NFL.
Two of them in particular, I remember, and were insane.
It is kind of risky to have, the Browns season's going to be crap anyway, but it's kind of risky to have a rookie backup. Because if Flacco goes down, you've got a rookie playing. Mm-hmm. And then maybe Shedeur gets an opportunity if Flacco goes down, because then now he is the backup. And backups play all the time.
Maybe it was just their way of putting them in their place.
But look, you want a level playing field, but sometimes you can't have a level playing field.
Yeah, I don't think that they'd really care that much who's the two and the three. But just let the natural order of things, let Dylan be two and Shedeur play three. Just to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, odds are that Dylan Gabriel will get the first crack once they start losing a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Look, they
because we don't expect Flacco to go on this winning streak.
No, they're in a brutal division and they're starting Joe Flacco in week one.
Yeah.
They know how this season's going to kind of transpire.
What are they projected to win? Like five games?
4.5, I think, is the number. Yeah. 5.5, I think, the highest number I've seen for them.
I could look, yeah.
Right.
It's going to be a brutal season in Cleveland.
Yeah. So, we'll see.
Yeah, so, I mean, after 6 weeks, then you probably toss the keys to Dylan Gabriel, see what he can do. If he struggles, then you give Shedeur a few games to see what he can do.
It's a tough situation. Look, we saw it when Kirk and RG3 were here. Mm-hmm. And you had that back and forth for a while. It's tough when you have two young guys who are drafted. That's why it usually doesn't happen. You don't have a team draft two quarterbacks.
Right. Yeah.
Look, they got absolutely bunged with the Deshaun Watson deal.
Yeah. Well,
all right. Bunged.
Well, they did that to themselves.
They did it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And it wasn't just like
they made their bed.
Sure.
So
now they're paying for it.
They're paying for it.
Yeah.
Now maybe next year, if they have a bad year and they got the number one pick or two or three or whatever, they can draft another QB who they think is a legitimate franchise leader and not someone in the third or the fifth round.
Well, let me just say this.
Right now, that's the spot that they're in.
Regarding the Deshaun thing, correct me if I'm wrong. So from a moral perspective, like, it was pretty reprehensible. Give that guy all that guaranteed money, you know, ridiculous. And even though he hadn't played in like a couple years, I don't think anybody thought the drop-off would be as precipitous as it was.
No, people thought he'd be a top five quarterback.
Nobody thought he would just be god-awful.
Yeah.
Like, it's shocking how bad he's been.
He smashed into the wall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he just couldn't play anymore.
It's wild.
I know.
Yeah. I don't even understand.
It's a fall from grace on and off the field for him.
It's wild.
I haven't paid attention to their sideline. Has he been on the field during games?
I mean, we've seen workout videos of him. I don't know if he's been at the facility. I guess he has been, right? Working out. I haven't seen the sideline stuff either.
He's generally on the sideline, like in street clothes.
He is? Okay.
Like in, you know, in Browns warm-up gear.
I mean, that's what I assumed. I just didn't know. I haven't watched any of the Browns preseason games.
One of the worst bungled picks or signings of the last, I don't know, 20 years.
Well, I think you, maybe that's just longer. Maybe that's all forever. On Jimmy Haslam, right? Isn't that yes. all on him?
Yeah.
That was kind of like his deal. So, look, Stefanski's got to try to eke out as many wins as he can. But I wouldn't be surprised if Flacco struggled early, if they went to Gabriel early. It could be way earlier than 6 weeks.
Oh,
could
yeah.
be. It could be, the
could be week two.
Yeah.
Week three.
It could be yeah. the second half of
could
the opening
game. Could
be
halftime of a game, yeah. But also, Flacco has shown an ability to get hot. So he could, you know, he could do okay.
So apparently Deshaun Watson has a quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
Named Quincy Avery.
Well, he's the quarterback guru guy.
Yeah, and he tweeted out, you know why you should never trust media for player reviews? Because they had y'all thinking Dylan Gabriel was chopped liver and he couldn't see, and he'd been out there hooping.
Mm-hmm.
So he's praising Dylan Gabriel.
Mm-hmm. What's he saying about Deshaun?
Oh, Deshaun.
What's he saying about Deshaun? Nothing. That was just
yeah,
all
I'm
about
trying
Dylan.
To look up Deshaun's news, and I just get stuff about his coach.
Yeah. Well, we saw the video of him.
And
like,
then he slammed RG3.
What did he say?
I guess, you know, he's not saying, he's saying that Stefanski isn't derailing Shedeur Sanders' career.
Yeah. Who knows? It'll at some point, with the bright lights in a regular season game, I do believe Shedeur will get an opportunity. How many opportunities? Who knows? May only be a couple. But I think he'll get an opportunity. But he's certainly going to have to do better than he did in the last preseason game. He's going to have to get rid of the ball. He can't force stuff. Take what they give you and move on. He certainly didn't do that in the last preseason game.
It's crazy, though, how far he fell, given that Mel Kiper had him as his top quarterback.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I still think there's some potential there.
Did he have him ahead of Ward?
I think so.
Yeah. If he had him as his top quarterback.
It's wild. What are people buzzing about Ward? What are the early returns?
I saw Orlovsky on ESPN really praising him.
He was? Okay.
That's I good. Don't know that he's done much in the preseason just for his general skill set and what he brings to the table.
I like his story.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm particularly excited to see him play.
By the way, is anybody taking a gander at the Browns' schedule?
No, what are they?
I saw they open with the Bengals.
They open with the Bengals. That's a home game.
I thought the Giants' opening schedule was brutal.
Right.
They open at home against the Bengals. Bengals should smack them around, I would think. Then they're at the Ravens in week two. That's an impossible place for them to win. Week three, they host the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
You think Jordan Love isn't going to carve them up?
Be hard to win there.
Week four, they're at the Lions. Mm-hmm. Tell me when you see a win in any of these games
well,
for the Browns.
Certainly on paper, they look bad.
Week five, they host the Vikings.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a possibility
with
for a win.
JJ's struggling.
And week six, they're at the Steelers.
Yeah.
That has 0-6 or 1-5 written all over it.
What are the chances Flacco's still starting after those six
games?
Well,
if they're 0-5.
Yeah, zero.
I think you have to play Gabriel then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Although,
but the league is unpredictable. We're looking at it on paper.
I understand.
We didn't think the Patriots were going to beat the Bengals last year in week one.
Kind of makes me want to take the Bengals again as the week one survivor pick. But I don't know if I could cast our lot with them again in back-to-back years.
I think you almost have to.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's tantalizing, isn't it?
Look, they took the preseason a lot different this year.
Right.
Than they did in the last couple
and they're
years.
A more talented team.
Much more
Cleveland.
Talented.
By the way, according to Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, The Browns say that Watson is coming along well in his rehab from his re-torn Achilles repair and could be ready to go later in the season. Whether or not they decide to activate him remains to be seen, but they're happy with how he's attacked his rehab and how he's helped the other quarterbacks, especially Gabriel and Sanders.
I think the whole undercurrent has been he's never going to play a game in a Browns uniform ever again. Right. He's just going to collect all of his money.
Yeah.
And just be a major distraction on the sidelines.
Or maybe not play ever again in the league.
I mean, that's, I'm sure, is a possibility, too.
Is there a chance? I mean, how old is he? He can't even be 30. Is he probably maybe 31? I mean, he's got to be. He's still relatively young.
Would you want to take a chance 29. On Deshaun Watson?
He's 29 years old.
It's
not that I was just the guy was so good early on. for it to just disappear
the
way it did.
Years ago, so long ago.
I know.
His good years are so far in the rearview mirror.
I know.
I would say
but he might recapture it.
I just don't understand it.
I would say that if you were just kind of looking at the schedule for week one for a survivor pick, the Bengals jump off the page because of who they're playing.
I understand.
But they are dicey.
Right. Just given their history.
Given their history, yes. Early in the season. But Zach Taylor treated this like a different preseason.
I mean, there's no way they're going to lose in week one to the Browns. I'm sorry.
We said that last year against the Patriots.
They're not. They're not.
I mean, back to DeShaun Eby. I'm a little intrigued. Now, I was duped by him. Everybody really was. But I remember being blown away one time where after the game, do you remember he went to the board and he described like where every receiver should have been? And he seemed to be a true student of the game.
Yeah.
And a lot of the analysts were impressed because they were like blown away. He was like, this is what I saw. And then he went through like five different things and was like, whoa, that guy's just athletically gifted, but he knows everything that's going on the field.
Yeah. Just to see him just lose it the way he did is what? Did he lose arm strength?
Well, he had a shoulder injury.
Maybe that's what it is.
He had an arm.
I mean, he definitely lost some
injury.
Of his mobility, too.
Yeah.
Like that was one of his hallmarks.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if he's physically limited like that, the arm's just never going to be the same. The mobility's never going to be the same. Well, then I wouldn't bet on it.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Joel Corey, former sports agent. We'll break down Terry McLaurin's extension with the Washington Commanders. We'll do that next. Bank local, cheer local. In business, every day is game day. Business is always moving up or down, but never still. That's why the Main Street Bank team treats every day like game day. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank proudly serving the DMV since 2004. Visit mstreetbank.com. to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Welcome back to the show. Junks on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980 AM, Monumental Sports Network as well. Should be joined shortly by Joel Corey, former sports agent, works for CBSSports.com. We can break down Terry's deal, talk about Trey Hendrickson, talk about Micah Parsons. Still holding in and more.
Well, I will give Joel credit because he was one of many that thought, eventually they would come to a deal. I honestly thought over the last couple of weeks that the Skins just wouldn't budge and he would just have to play out his deal. And then they would just have to work it out next year.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen, obviously. They came to an agreement that Terry and his camp was comfortable with, and they've got him. Basically, I think right at the time where they needed to. It was reaching a tipping point, Cakes.
Yeah,
absolutely. With week one looming, it had to get done. I believe Joel Corey joins us now on the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Good morning, Joel. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We are doing well.
A lot better now.
Are you surprised that it took this long for the deal to get done for Terry? We know that deadlines spur deals to get done. You as a former agent, you have to know that. Terry now back in the mix for Jaden Daniels as his number one weapon heading into week one.
This was probably about the time you needed to get it done for him to be most effective week one. CeeDee Lamb last year got done around the same time. You have had deals which have stretched out longer. Nick Bosa didn't get done until a couple of days before the regular season in 2023, and he said that limited his effectiveness. I think ideally you wanted it done after the second preseason game, but you still got enough time for Terry to be Terry for the regular season opener.
We don't have any details. I assume you don't have any yet either until it's kind of the contract's kind of like filed with the league office or whatever. But just from the basic parameters, what is your best guess as to kind of how this played out?
Yeah, the only detail I've heard is there's a $30 million signing bonus. So I'm assuming his base salary is no longer $15.5 million, that it may have dropped to his league minimum of $1.255 million. I'm assuming the $850,000 in per-game roster bonuses, which is $50,000 a game for every game he's active, remained intact. So you may have picked up nearly $7 million of cap space with the deal. The up to $96 million to me implies that the base value is somewhere less than $32 million per year. I can't imagine there is a deal done where the base value isn't more than T. Higgins' $28.75 million per year. The reason I say that is T. Higgins is a number two receiver in Cincinnati. If he played on other teams, he might be a number one receiver. But that's not the case with Jamar Chase on the other side. Mm-hmm. In general principle, I never saw Terry signing a deal which was going to be less than the top of the number two receiver market.
How does the team pay the signing bonus? Does that pay all up front, or does that get spread out throughout the season?
It's negotiable. Sometimes part of it is paid within 2 weeks upon execution. In some cases, it's paid in two or three installments where there might be another date in November, then maybe another date after the season. Some of it's deferred into the 2026 calendar year. In other cases, there's a part of the payment within 2 weeks of execution. Then it's paid over the course of the regular season, like base salary, the remainder. So that's something that is negotiable. Teams have a cash budget as well as the salary cap. So they're going to be more insistent on the pay schedule for the signing bonus trying to fit into their cash needs.
What, how does this set them up now? I mean, obviously you don't have all the details in front of you, but with the group of guys that are going to be eligible to maybe to have their contracts redone or entering their final year, whatever it may be, the guys that like the Tunsils,
the Frankie Louvus,
the Marshawn Lattimores, etc.
Debo.
How does this deal kind of help or hurt that situation?
Well, you have cost certainty. So one thing in getting the deal done now, you don't have to worry about a franchise tag next year, which would have been slightly over $30 million. I can't imagine that the cap number next year would approach what a franchise tag was going to be in 2026. I would say in terms of the pecking order, it would be Tunsil first, Louvu second, Lattimore third. Debo has to prove that how he's looked in training camp can carry over during the season. And now that you have a receiver which is most likely $30 million per year in the base value, that's my estimate, is there really a place for Debo if he performs really well? Because how much are you going to devote to receiver position?
Mm-hmm. The way I look at it, Joel, is both sides won. Terry gets a big FU money, all right? He's already had it, but now he gets more, $30 million up front, and then whatever he makes next year. And then, obviously, the Commanders, I'm sure they probably won the guaranteed number, and they get their player, and they certainly needed Terry back on the field. I think both sides won.
Yeah, if you're trying to have Super Bowl aspirations, so you definitely need him because he's your deep threat. He's your most reliable receiver. So you needed to get something done with him. I suspect 2025 and 2026, whatever that amount is, for the most part, is fully guaranteed. Maybe that's between 50 and 55 million. I don't think it's going to get to the 60 that DK Metcalf has in the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The real question to me is there a guarantee in the third year? Metcalf has 20 million as an injury guarantee only in his third year. Pittsburgh rarely does a guarantee in the second year.
Mm-hmm.
Three players, TJ Watt twice, Minka Fitzpatrick, and now Metcalf. So the question is, if there is a guarantee in 2027, how much is it? When does the injury guarantee convert to a full guarantee? Would it be when the year comes up in 2027, or would it be how McLaurin would want it, where fifth day, third day of the 2026 league year, whatever is guaranteed, if there is anything in 27, vests and becomes fully guaranteed at that point? That's a crucial element of the deal.
Joel, when do we see the Micah Parsons headline for his hold-in ending? Do you see that ending within the next couple days?
Well, if you go by past history, this will get done before the start of the regular season. But Jerry Jones is being slightly disingenuous here. One thing he's been consistent about is that he had extensive conversations with Micah Parsons back in March. I don't know if that's early March, late March. It was prior to the league meetings. But one thing he did say at the league meetings is, I know that I've spent 5 or 6 hours with him myself and had a lot of discussions. Most issues are in agreement, and I've discussed it all. We obviously don't have an agreement relative to a new contract. So Jerry knows he doesn't have an agreement because that's what he said in March. So him saying that Mike is reneging on an agreement, he's kind of gaslighting everybody as far as I'm concerned.
So, have you ever seen his body language was so bad on the sideline there?
Well, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I almost believe that he wants to be out of there.
Yeah, he may be fed up. This could get really interesting if there is no deal because the MRI came back clean for the most part. He's entitled to a second medical opinion, so he might go to Dr. Watkins in L.A., who's the back specialist. And who knows what Dr. Watkins could say. And after consulting with the team, you are under the CBA. You have a right to follow the medical advice of the second opinion doctors, his prognosis. So what if Dr. Watkins finds something, if he does this, then he might legitimately be sitting out. And then the Cowboys don't have a lot of recourse. They'll have to pay him. Or he could take the approach, I don't have a deal. I'll go out there week one because I want to make my money. And in the second play of the game, he has some sort of minor injury crop up where he comes up lame, and he's not playing the rest of that game. Jerry said, I could franchise him for 2 more years, but Micah can make this extremely difficult if he wants to. David Mulligetta also represents Jalen Ramsey. He forced the trade several years ago with back issues from the Jaguars to the Rams. So I'm curious to see how this thing plays out. It could go either way.
Joel, last guy before we let you go to talk about Trey Hendrickson. He just gets a pay bump from $16 million to $30 million. So they bump him by $14 million, but he's in his final year. So he makes $30 million this year, and then he hits free agency next year. So who knows? They may have to franchise him or just let him walk. Your thoughts on this deal?
That's more of a win for Cincinnati to me. There's a way you could have done a multi-year deal without the guarantee in the second year. Cincinnati has really front-loaded contracts to avoid guarantees. You could have made this where you would have been safe next year and had better cash flow than you would have the guarantee. He's going to be 31 next year. Mm-hmm. So he better play well. If he reverts back to his sack total a couple of years ago of 8, then people are going to hold his age against him. So it's kind of a risk more for him than the team.
Joel, thanks as always for the time, man. Always appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, buddy.
Joel Corey, former sports agent, works for CBSSports.com. NFL Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.